Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Tom Rain here from Tom's Big Spider. So I'm not sure if you guys can hear the rain pitter-patting in the background, but unfortunately it's downpouring here and will be downpouring most of the day until it turns into snow. And as a result, my tarantula room has two skylights, one of which is right over the computer where I record, and the rain's hitting the window. So I've been up here for the last hour doing feeding, trying to wait it out, but unfortunately it doesn't look like it's going to stop. So we're going to go ahead through it because, again, I don't want to miss another week. As for last week, just so everybody knows, I did sit down prepared to do the podcast, had my notes already. I was actually excited about this one. And we had our first stretch of like 3 days where the weather, like the high during the day was 20, which isn't terrible, but at night it was in the single digits. And as I've mentioned before, we have a problem with the heat not keeping up in the tarantula room, which means I have to run another heat source, which makes some noise. It runs in the background. There's a fan. So I sat down to do the podcast. It was really cold. The heat was staying up at a decent level, but I didn't want to take the chance of turning it off and having it not running and having the temperature drop up in here and possibly not be able to catch back up. So I had to wait to do the podcast, unfortunately. So I do apologize. The plan was to do one last week, but it just wasn't in the cards. The good thing is we had the people out. Finally, they think they figured out what the problem is, which is great because we have some very cold temperatures coming up, and I want to make sure that this thing is not going to drop down. It gets very stressful trying to watch it. Last year, we had a stretch where we had below zero weather, and at one point, it hit the high 50s in here. Now, good news is everybody was fine, but I was biting my nails, to say the least. So let's, fingers crossed, let's hope we don't have any more issues with the heat up here. So to kick this one off, I do want to go back to 2 weeks ago, the podcast we were doing about overcoming the fact that no matter how much good information you put out there, no matter how much you hope that people will take that good information and run with it, people will be people and they will ignore you. And it's been, what I was really glad about is I was kind of struggling. I actually planned on doing this podcast last year, and I struggled because I don't like being negative, but it's something that has started to impact me more and more as I've spent more time in the hobby. I think I had these dreams of grandeur that someday I'd put this information out there. I'd have my website. Once I got Tom's Big Spiders going on YouTube, they would be that, and people would just know that, hey, you know what? This guy knows what he's talking about. We can listen to this. And that's just, unfortunately, never going to happen. It's not how it works out. People are going to ignore good information. People are going to listen to folks that maybe aren't in it to help people raise tarantulas. They're in it to sell stuff. They don't know what they're doing. They're, you know, their husbandry isn't good. We have one of the biggest tarantula YouTubers out there right now. I don't think is a horrible human being, but that individual is not a good example for husbandry, and this person brings millions of eyeballs to the hobby, so we have to kind of deprogram these folks. So I think it's always going to be an issue, unfortunately, that people are just not, there's going to be ones out there just don't know how to even take the information when it's spoon-fed to you. So I was really, really happy that a lot of folks chimed in and said they've shared similar frustrations, that they recognize what I'm talking about. Again, I didn't want it to be a downer thing on the hobby or like I'm making fun of people. I'm not. It's just the nature of the beast, and it's something that I will never get over. So a couple of the comments that we got one from Mitch. My wife is a vet and we both feel this one. People claim their pet is their baby yet refuse medicine and watch the baby, in quotes, die. And it's funny that you mentioned that because I have spoken to vets before. Our personal vet is fantastic. We've been using him now for, I think, oh gosh, like close to 20 years. And he's one that expresses the same sentiments that a lot of people should not be keeping animals or owning animals. I don't like to use the term owning because I think with a lot of them, they become like family members, but whatever the case, there are many people out there that should not be allowed to keep animals. And it's funny because Billy's been watching when I'm up here recording podcasts doing tarantula stuff. She puts on TV and does some work downstairs, and she's been watching these vet shows on Disney, and I've been watching a couple of myself, and I'm like, I'm so glad. For years I wanted to be a vet. I'm so glad I didn't become a vet, because I don't know how these people do it when they tell folks your diet for your pet is wrong, and they go, I don't care, this is what I'm feeding them, or I'm not feeding them that because that's gross, or whatever. They just ignore the advice. Or my favorite, they bring them in, all right, we can fix them, yeah, I don't, we'll just put them to sleep, I don't have the money for that. It sucks. And it's, that's with our, in many cases, our furry pets that people are willing to spend a lot of money on. With spiders, there's this almost from some folks, I get the idea that they're almost a disposable pet. Like, hey, yeah, I love the spider, but in the grand scheme of things, it's just a bug, and they don't really freak out about it, which kind of stinks. I had another one from Megan, felt this. I used to be a vet tech, and the reason I left was how people would get dogs, cats, exotics, because they are cute, without doing proper research. It would drain me to see the animals treated as a fad. That's right there, another one from vets, and I feel you guys. I really do, because it does become frustrating. It becomes frustrating on my end when I have folks contact me and say, hey, I don't know what's going on with this spider. And I go, oh, I can tell you right now. It's the substrate's too moist. I can tell because there's condensation all up the side of it. There's not enough cross ventilation. And then they tell me, well, that's how the pet store told me to set it up, or that's how this YouTuber taught me how to set it up. And they don't listen to it. It's like, then why ask me? Because now I'm upset because I have to be privy to the fact that this animal is suffering because you're too much of a bonehead to take advice. You solicited advice from me, and now you're telling me I'm not taking it. What is the point of this conversation? So a couple folks like that. Jason Johnson, oh wow, imagine having TBS as your teacher and he's actively trying to help you and you dismiss him. Great episode as always. Thank you. And again, I joke around here. Like I said to Billy, I go, Tom's Big Spiders is telling this girl how to keep a spider. She's ignoring him, and it's a joke. I don't want anybody to ever think I'm thinking like that, but I do have some experience in this area. The kids do know it. And then an update on that story. It got even more interesting. When she told me she got a blue tarantula, my first fear was that it was Piscelotherium metallica. I've had a couple folks over the years go, yeah, I picked up this beautiful blue spider and it was Piscelotherium metallica. When I asked her for a photo of it, what she brought up was the El Sosme. So I took a look at it, went, all right, they can be a little rambunctious, but once they get older, they tend to settle down. It's better than a P. Metallica. Perfect. I told her how to set it up and everything. Well, the other day I was asking, hey, how's the spider going? She's like, good, not eating as well. And, you know, it just molted. And I was handling it the other day. And I said, oh, handling it? And she goes, wait a minute, I have a picture of it. She goes through her phone, and guess what she pulls up? A picture of a P. Metallica. And my jaw dropped. I was in the office with a couple of my coworkers who knew I'm in the spiders, and I had to give her a crash course on Piscelotherium species. I go, all right, here's the deal. You never want to handle that spider again. She's like, well, the pet store told me it was very laid back and tame. I was like, that may be, but if that spider bites you, you're going to be in absolutely miserable condition. And I explained, you know, I actually pulled up one of my videos where I explained what the bites are and everything. I pulled up one of my P. Metallica videos. I go, I've been keeping Piscelotherium species for a long, long time. I have a fantastic pain tolerance. I don't ever want to be bitten by one of these. I talked about the full body cramping, the nausea, the pain scale. You know, I've heard people say on a 1 to 10, the pain scale, it's a 15. Don't play around with this. So I hope she listens to me. Probably won't, but there is an issue in the hobby with people getting information from folks that are not reputable, that don't know what they're talking about. The pet store told her it was tame, you can handle it. The pet store probably didn't even know what they had there. As far as they knew, all tarantula bites are like bee stings. They didn't bother to do even just a little bit of research to find out that the spider they had there can be fast. Luckily, they're very, very shy, but God forbid you get bitten by it, you're going to be in a world of hurt. So yep, there's what happens when you don't listen. Like, I'm hoping she's okay. I tried to stress to her, do not hold this tarantula again. Do not put yourself in any situation where the tarantula could get out into your house, because in which case, she has a younger brother and sister. It could put them at risk. You don't want to play around. I just have to hope she listens. But I'll be honest, I don't have a lot of faith that she will, and that's kind of sad. So thanks for that comment, Jason. Last one we got is from Saith. I believe it's pronounced Saith. If I'm wrong, please correct me. Amateur here, and I've sunk so much time into research due to conflicting info. There's a lot of outdated advice, books, care sheets, daunting for noobs. I try to find commonalities from many sources, and I think that's a really good pointer for folks who are looking. You're going to find those sources out there that don't necessarily jibe. Look for the things that do. What is the if when you look at it, go, this person says this, this person says this, this person, they agree on it. It can be difficult though, because there are people out there saying two entirely different things. I just had a conversation with somebody via email about the fact that although I'm out there saying I don't bother with humidity and any of that stuff in my enclosures, there are others out there that talk about humidity and say they keep it at a certain humidity level. Do I feel that's necessary? No, I don't. Are those individuals, do they know what they're doing? They know what they're doing for them. My thought is I'm always trying to look at the person coming in that has zero knowledge of tarantulas and exotics. What's going to make it easiest for them to keep these tarantulas the best they can to give, make sure these tarantulas grow up from little slings to healthy adults and try to strip away the stuff that's not needed. Are there things in the hobby that we can do? Yes. Are all of those things necessary? Absolutely not. And that's how I treat it. Can you put a hygrometer in every single enclosure? Sure. Knock yourself out. Is it needed in my estimation? Absolutely not. We can tell. I can tell you right now, I can point to different enclosures and tell you ballpark where the ambient humidity inside would be without even having a hygrometer in there, because I know they have moist substrate. I know what kind of airflow I got. It's not needed. But people that want to do it, they tend to drive themselves nuts with it. What can you do about it? So thank you so much for everybody that chimed in on that one. That was a fun one to do. It was cathartic, quite frankly. I've been, you know, struggling lately sometimes getting up the motivation to do the Tom's Big Spider stuff, because it's like we're nearing 10 years, which is awesome. I told Billy, I go, you know what? Of all the things I've tried to do in my life, this is the one I think I'm most proud of what I was able to accomplish. But I think it's at a point where I always thought there would be an end in sight. And I was, again, silly. They dare to dream. I always thought there would be a point where I wouldn't need to do it anymore because people would figure it out. But it's always going to be there. I'm always going to get these kinds of questions. I'm always going to get people that come to me and go, hey, you know what? I just set up my avicularia species and I have a waterfall in it. What do you think about this? And I'm looking at the email thinking to myself, why on God's green earth would you come to me of all people? Find one of the boneheads that's done this and tried this. Talk to them about it. It's not what I do. So it was good getting that one out, and it was even better to get the response. I did lots of responses, emails, comments on YouTube videos. A lot of folks would just go over to YouTube videos and go, hey, I heard your newest podcast. I appreciate it. It really means a lot that I'm not the only one out there thinking like this, seeing this type of issue. It makes me feel good to know I'm not insane. Maybe it's other people. So thanks for that. So today's episode, as you've probably deduced, we are doing a versus with not just a species of tarantulas, with two genera of tarantulas. And which genera? Well, you already know because it's in the title. Pamphibidius versus Formictopus. I have toyed with this one for so long, since I first started getting into Formictopus, and I would post up Formictopus and people would come onto my videos and go, yeah, those are really nice. You should really get some Pamphos. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I have some Pamphos too. I love them as well. It's just Formictopus weren't as popular at that time. So here's the deal. There are some disclaimers I have to put out there. Number one, these are for fun. And I will say that everybody has responded to these beautifully, where I think they recognize it's just a fun way to discuss two different species, especially two similar species, or in this case, two similar genera of tarantulas, and kind of break down, like, what are some of the pros? What are some of the cons? It's not meant to be like, this is the best species. You can't do that. The wonderful thing about this tarantula hobby is there are just so many types of spiders out there. There's something for everyone. So I'll have people all the time go, why don't you have these spiders? And I love these so much. Well, that's great. You love them. They're just not my cup of tea, but that doesn't mean they're bad spiders. It's just I have things that I gravitate towards. People have other spiders they gravitate towards. So let's get that out of there right away. Also, when talking about temperament, and you know, one of the categories we look at is temperament, one of the categories we look at is growth rate. I'm looking at my own personal experience. I did go out and do some research, see what other people were saying, but always remember, it can differ from person to person. Some people can have the most laid-back specimen you'd ever meet, and the guy could have one from the same exact sack that's crazy. It differs from spider to spider. So I always want to make that very, very clear, because it makes this part difficult. I will say I've raised multiple of these, especially Formictopus, a lot of Formictopus, several Pamphibidia species, and I've looked up what other people have said about them, so I feel pretty confident that these are correct, but it can differ. Same thing with, you know, the growth rates, depending on temperatures, feeding schedule, those can all differ as well. I'm just going ballpark here. So again, this is for fun. No matter how this turns out, it's anytime you do a list or a versus like this, somebody's got to win, somebody's got to lose usually, but I'm doing air quotes. You can't see them. It's all in good fun. And I'm sure people think, oh, well, we know where your interest lies. You love Formictopus. Yes, let me call myself out and say I'm a little biased on this one, because I do love Formictopus. And why do I love Formictopus? Because back when I got really into the hobby, I was dying to get some Pamphos, and they were so expensive. I got a Pamphibidius Antinous a while back. It was a sex female, probably about 3 inches or so. And then I got a couple species Durans. Those were expensive as heck, but they were new to the hobby, or it seemed to be newer. Nobody knew much about them. And I loved them. But then I went for more Pamphos, and they were so darn expensive. Then I saw these ones called Formictopus. It was Formictopus cancerides, where everybody described as a big, brown, angry spider. And somehow that appealed to me. So I picked up some of those, which began my lifelong love of Formictopus. Started picking up every type of Formictopus I could find. And at that time, nobody was very interested in them overall. So you could get them for much cheaper than you could Pamphos. So that's how it wasn't that I didn't like Pamphos. It was at the time we didn't have the money we have now. And I had to be very selective with what I bought. So I wanted big spiders. Formictopus at that time were cheaper. I went with Formictopus. Now it's kind of leveled off. So when we get the prices, we'll talk about that in a minute. So I want to make it clear, I never had a thing against Pamphos. I have, I think, kept 5 species of Pamphos. I plan to keep more. I love Pamphos. I love all of the big tropical spiders. I adore them. But yes, if I'm going to be, say, which one is my favorite right now, it would be Formictopus. But that's just because I've spent so long collecting them all. So let's break it down. First thing we're going to talk about is sling size. Now, with Pamphibedia, slings tend to be about 0.5 inches to an inch, or 1.27 centimeters to 2.56 centimeters or so. However, it should be stated, many are right around the 1-inch mark right off the bat. They are usually, generally speaking, larger slings. They have smaller sacks. Some more sack sizes, so not as many slings in the sacks, but bigger slings, which we always talk about, that larger slings tend to freak people out less. A 1-inch sling is a very well-started sling. I just got my Pamphibedius species mascara, and that one was a good size one right off the bat. My Durans, I believe, were second to third instar. They were right around the inch mark or so. So bigger slings to start off, which is always a perk for folks who are looking to start with slings, especially people who haven't kept slings before. Now, Formictopus, in the same ballpark, I would say 0.5 inches or to 0.75 inches. They tend to be just a bit smaller. I think they have larger sacks, but smaller slings. So in this department, I think it's so close. When you got a half inch sling, that can be a little on the small side and freak people out compared to a 1-inch sling. So we're going to give the edge in this case to Pamphibedius. They do tend to have the larger slings starting off, which can be a plus for people. It's close. I mean, certain species of Formictopus are going to start off the same size as certain species of Pamphibedius, but I think all in all, Pamphos start off a little bit larger as slings. So we're going to give them the edge there. Now, the next one, growth rate or time to adulthood. This one I struggled with because I've raised several of both, and I think they're very similar. With Pamphibedius, it's fast. It's very fast. Slings can reach, again, we're going to go 4 inches. They can reach over 4 inches, depending on the conditions, or 10.16 centimeters in a year. That is really, really good growth rate. And on the low end of that, for people that are keeping them maybe at chillier temperatures, I think 3 inches is easily attainable. But 4 inches, definitely 4 inches or above in a year. Now, they continue to grow rather quickly as they get larger. So they don't, they obviously, all spiders usually hit a certain size. Usually it's around that 5 or 6 inch mark and things slow down a bit. These guys, if we were doing a race to say 8 inches, I think Pamphibedius would hit that mark before Formictopus. Now let's bounce over to Formictopus for a second. Fast growth rate as well. Slings can once again reach 4 inches or 10.16 centimeters or more in a year. However, I found that once they hit around the 4 to 5 inch mark or so, the growth tends to slow way down. So you're going to have within, we'll say 2 years, you're going to have what looks like a fluffy adult colored Formictopus spider. However, at that point, things are going to slow down a bit. So I think that's where the Pamphibedius might have a slight edge. Again, if we were doing the race to say 7 inches, we'll go 7 inches, race to 7 inches, I think under most circumstances, the Pamphibedius species would win that one out. So after careful deliberation, because I know I've spoken before about how quickly Formictopus can grow. However, since then, I've had other species of Formictopus that were a little slower as well. For example, my Formictopus erratus were much slower growing than some of the other ones. So I think if you looked at the overall big pictures, all the species out there, that initial fast growth rate in the first year, and then how long to be before you've got that big beefy spider you can show off, I do think we have to give the edge to Pamphibidia. So sling size, growth rate, you're talking about a slightly faster growing spider that starts off a little bit bigger. Pampho is going to win both of those categories. Now, ease of care. I think earlier on, like when I first started studying Pamphibidius and trying to figure out care, a lot out there about them being very moisture dependent. I think they are very hardy spiders. I think they're tolerant of a myriad of conditions. I think folks who keep them a little drier don't have this. One guy told me, and I don't recommend this, but he kept most of his dry, which is water issues, even his slings. I give most of my slings enough room to burrow because some of them will burrow. I give them moist substrate as slings, moist substrate, and room to burrow as juveniles. And then as adults, they can be kept on the drier side with water, although I always keep a corner part of the substrate moist. So my Duran right now has a corner of moist substrate. My Araña Pollito has moist substrate in the lower end. That one actually burrows, so I keep it moist. My Antinous, again, I keep part of it, big water dish in there, and then a corner of it moist. I kind of circulate around the corners. And then my Mascara, same thing right now. That one's still just kind of segued into juvenile. It's probably about 3 inches. It's lost its Christmas tree patterning. I keep that one a little bit moist as well. So I do make sure that they have some moisture, but I have spoken to people that keep them on the drier side. For Myctopus, almost the exact, I keep them the exact same way. Moist is slings with room to burrow. Moist is juveniles with room to burrow. And about the burrowing thing, some will burrow, some won't. I found that some of my Formyctopus will burrow as slings. I've had others that don't. I give them the option. And then adults, you can keep them dry with, make sure they always have a water dish. And again, I like to keep part of the substrate moist. So when I feed them, what I do is I drop in a bunch of crickets as they're eating, fill their water dishes, and then I moisten down part of the substrate and let it dry out in between. So for ease of care, these guys, again, we talk about they eat great, they grow quickly, it's not that difficult to keep them at all. I would call this one a tie. We got both of these in the yellow, as in there's really no edge. Pamphos and Formyctopus, if I had done this 8-9 years ago, I probably would have given ease of care to Formyctopus because it was more out there about the Pamphos needing that extra moist environment. But I think if you're used to keeping a spider that has a little bit, you know, you want to give it a little bit of moisture, neither of these species are particular, or genera are particularly difficult to keep. Now, speed tends to freak people out. I think as slings, Pamphibidia slings can boogie, but it doesn't ever become a problem. Most of them will burrow and they'll run to their burrows if they're disturbed, but they do seem to be a little more inclined to use their speed, not only as slings, but as adults. Mine will tend to, like when I disturb them, open the enclosure, like I went to feed my Antinous as I was waiting for the rain to stop. I said, oh, I might as well feed my Antinous, see how she's doing, looking beautiful. But I dropped in, when I opened the top of the enclosure, she kind of did a little sprint around the enclosure and then settled down. So nothing unmanageable, but definitely they have speed and can use it when they want to. For Myctopus, again, slings are very, very quick, very fast. And I used to love watching them hunt because it'd sprint across the enclosure and grab those crickets and barrel roll with them. So they can use the speed if motivated. Usually isn't an issue. With the majority of my adults, the speed is not an issue at all. We get to temperament, they don't do a lot of moving. So I haven't had any issues with them. The only one that would use, or the species that I kept that did use its speed, was Formyctopus species Dominican purples. Those guys would bolt around the enclosure. I had one almost bolt out of the enclosure on me once. So again, I see this one as kind of a tie. Are they faster than the Gab species? Abso-freaking-lutely. They are, I think any spider can be fast when motivated, but these guys, especially when they're slings, they can really move, but as adults, they tend to calm down a bit. I think Pamphos as adults are a little more inclined to use their speed, but not enough that I would give one or the other an edge. So again, with speed, we are going to call it a tie at this point. I don't really see that much of a difference between the speed, maybe in how they use it, but again, having kept several of both, not enough for me to give an edge to one or the other. Now, temperament. This is the one that people are probably going to go nuts over, but I have to go by not only my own experience, but I went through a bunch of my videos with Pamphos and Formyctopus, looked at comments, looked up the behavior and the temperament online to see what people were saying, and it's pretty much mirrors what I've seen with mine. With pamphlebitis, mine have all been a bit skittish and have all been more inclined to run and hide than to stand their ground. I honestly don't ever recall getting a threat pose from a single one of my pamphlebitis species at all. So no threat poses, no angry displays, but they tend to be a little more inclined again to bolt when disturbed. And I think that's something that can make them a little more of an issue to deal with. I mean, this is going to come down to personal opinion. I'd rather have a spider that stands its ground than one that's going to run around. One that's going to run around, possibly end up out of that enclosure, can be an issue. One that's going to stand its ground, I know it's going to sit there and throw some threat postures up at me, and that's about it. And that's, for me, easier to deal with, but I guess it comes down to the individual. Now, Formictopus have a terrible reputation for being incredibly defensive, mean, and ornery. It's been around for the longest time. I told you when I first became interested in Formictopus cancerides, it was because of all the reports that they were really nasty. I was graduating up, working my way through the hobby. I was getting over my fear of spiders, and I wanted something that was going to challenge me with maybe some difficult behaviors. Unfortunately, this has not been my experience at all. Now, this may be where I differ, but I will say every time I put up Formictopus videos, the majority of folks agree with me on this. There are going to be specimens out there, and this is what we talked about before we got into the list, that are going to be more high-strung and more ornery than others. I have not found this at all. With the exception of both of my Formictopus species, Dominican purples, which did go through a few years of being very bolty and skittish, and they would run around and freak out whenever I opened their enclosures, the majority of my species, and I think I'm up to having kept 14 different ones, supposed species, the majority of them have pretty much been pet rocks. When I feed these guys, they're the easiest spiders in the world for me to feed. I open up their enclosures, they sit there, calm as can be. I toss in some crickets, they scarf them all up. I do my husbandry. Have I received some threat postures? Yes. 99% of the threat postures I've received, and there haven't been a whole heck of a lot considering how many Formictopus I keep, 99% of the threat postures are me disturbing one after I open up the enclosure by dropping a prey item in. So the cricket bounces off the spider or runs around the spider. The spider throws up this impressive threat posture and then realizes, oh crud, this is food, eats, and there's no problem. So I have found Formictopus to be incredibly easy to deal with. I've found that they are, again, they are a great showcase spider. They just sit out there in the open. I give the edge in this one slightly to Formictopus. Now, if you're somebody that's very unnerved by threat postures, yes, the Formictopus, I think, is more likely to give one. Yes, that could make a Formictopus a less desirable spider to keep. But I think for somebody who's used to seeing threat posture and not really worried about a threat posture, I honestly feel like my Formictopus, temperament-wise, are a little, they have the edge in this respect. Now, while we're still talking about temperament, I have this as a separate category. Hairs. With the exception of my pamphlebitis species, Duran, none of my adults have ever kicked. I do get my pamphlebitis species, Duran female, if caught out in the open, will kick some hairs. The hairs can be a little bit nasty. That said, not really a big deal with any of the other ones. Haven't had a lot of hair kicking. However, when doing some research on them and looking up, there are folks out there that report that theirs will, they describe them as shy, skittish, and they'll kick some hairs if cornered. So that's something to keep in mind for people that are afraid of hairs or not into the hairs or don't want to take the chance of getting exposed to the hairs. Pamphlebitis can kick hairs. Are they likely to do it as adults? I don't think so, but I think they're more likely than Formictopus. I've raised over 24 Formictopus spiders, and I've only ever had one kick. One ever. This was a couple months ago. I startled the spider. It kicked a couple hairs and then ran a couple inches and then just stopped, and that was it. It wasn't very big. It didn't even look like a big, there wasn't a big cloud that came off. It was almost like, hey, I can do this. It's like they have the hairs, but they don't seem to know what to do with them. I've actually had folks come to me and go, yeah, I like Formictopus because they don't have urticating hairs. That's how little these guys kick. Slings, I've heard some folks, slings might be a little more inclined to kick. I don't think I've ever seen a sling kick. I've had, again, one formictopus kick. It was the coolest thing ever because until that point, I had never seen a single formictopus kick. Again, this comes up to temperament before. Are they likely to bolt? No. Are they likely to kick? No. What you are likely to get is one of their ornery threat postures, which are actually, I find, kind of comical. Usually mine, they don't even have their fangs out. They're just trying to make themselves look as large and impressive as possible. I've had them throw up a threat posture where they flip over, land on their back, and just stay like that, which again, I find to be cute. So in my opinion, the temperament and hairs go to formictopus. Formictopus, there's not going to be an issue with hairs unless you get a real oddball. Most of the time, it's not going to be an issue. In temperament, I find that they're a little easier to deal with because they don't bolt. I find bolting to be more of an issue than standing their ground. I've spoken to others that say the same thing. But again, mileage may vary. Other people may disagree and go, hey, I'd rather have them bolt all day long. The threat postures scare me. But in my mind, those two go to formictopus. So right now, we have two for Pamphibidius, two for formictopus, and two that are tied, which is ease of care and speed. Now we're going to move on to hunting and prey drive for Pamphibidius. Awesome hunters. Absolutely awesome hunters. Active, energetic. They will sprint across enclosures, grab things, barrel roll. I just fed my Pamphibidius mascara before we did this. I dropped a cricket in. That thing sprung across the enclosure, grabbed the cricket, rolled on its back, wrapped it up in it like a blink of an eye. Amazing hunters, fantastic to watch. And that really doesn't change too much as they get older. Although I will say, I've got my Pamphibidius Antinous is a shy eater. So I went to feed her earlier. I dropped the roach in. She kind of just stood there. It was only after I closed her enclosure, walked away from her, she settled down that she ate the roach. Now, Formictopus, that's what made me fall in love with this genus, was their feeding response, an absolutely fantastic feeding response. Most are stone cold killers, enthusiastic hunters. They will bolt across enclosure. Even as adults, they will eat unless, again, you startle them. Sometimes they're in standby mode. You drop a cricket in, it startles the spider, and it like gets a little scared for a minute, but then it's fine. Awesome, awesome eaters. The only ones I had, again, that were the shy ones were my Pieroratus. The Pieroratus tend to be a little more shy when they were slings. They burrowed more than my other formictopus species. They ate smaller prey items. With a lot of my other formictopus, I could drop prey items as big as the actual spider, and they would take it down. They were a little more shy. So both, the majority of them are amazing hunters with a great prey drive. Are you going to have ones that stand out that aren't as great eaters? Of course, it's going to happen with everything. But again, when looking at the two of them, I have to call this one a tie. You can't do any better. I've had somebody like, oh, you think formictopus eats well, you should try Pamphibidius. They're both like, you can't get any better. You can't get much better as far as I'm concerned. They all have fantastic food drives. So we're calling the hunting and prey drive an absolute tie. Next up, we have max size. I struggled with this one just a little bit, but then add to concede, there is a clear winner, at least I think so. Pamphibidius species. These are big, big leggy spiders, and I think that's the key. These tend to be a little more sleek, a little more leggy than some of the formictopus. They can get up to 9 to 10 inches or 23 to 25.4 centimeters. That is a huge spider. That puts them up there with some of the giants, like, well, just behind some of the Theraphosa species. Theraphosa tend to be more bulky, and I think that's an important distinction to make. There are spiders that are leggier, they're more spidery, for lack of a better term, and then there are ones that are like tanks, like the Sturmi and the Blondie. The Apophysis or Apophysis tend to be gangly too, but they can get very, usually bigger overall than the Pamphos. But Pamphos are known to be one of the biggest species of spider, genus of spiders out there. Now, Formictopus. When I first got into Formictopus, I had read many things that said, yeah, supposedly they get really big, but 8 inches is pretty much about it, what you can usually expect from them. So 8 to 9 inches or 20.32 to 23.25 centimeters is what you can expect from them. Now, that is a huge spider. Don't get me wrong. I have big, big spiders over here. But although I read early on that they usually reach 8 inches, I have several that are pushing 9 inches. My Formictopus species, South Hispaniolas, I have one of them that molted. Last time she molted out was 8.5 inch molt. So she's pushing around 9. I have another one that just molted that I haven't gotten the molt out yet, but I'm guessing around 9. So still a giant, but not quite as large as some of the Pamphos. I have seen molts, pictures of molts of Pamphlebedia species next to tape measures where it's pretty easy to deduce that the spider hit that 10-inch mark. And I think 10-inch, you're talking the true Goliath. Once they hit 10 inches, that is a big, big, big spider. So both of them are big spiders. I have people that'll sit there and go, oh, Pamphos are so much bigger. I would not say so much bigger, but I think Pamphos have more of a chance of reaching that 9 to 10 inch mark, where the Formictopus species, 9 inches is probably going to be it. I have a couple Formictopus species here. My Cancerides are around the 8 inch mark. My Species Duran around the 8 inch mark, 9 inch mark. My Dominican Violets around the 8 inch mark or so. My Atachromatis, 8 inches or so. So they're all around that mark. The greens around 8.5. Seems the green species get a little bit bigger. But when it comes down to it, if I'm being honest, and if I'm going to say you're going to pick up a Pampho, you're going to pick up a Formictopus, which one's most likely going to be bigger as an adult, and in many cases bigger sooner as an adult? Got to give the edge to Pamphlebedius on that one. They are one of the true giants, but you can't go wrong with either one of them. Now, here comes the one that, for me, is the make it or break it. I know some people are going to disagree, but that's the fun of these. Color and patterning. Now, when I first saw Pamphos, I looked up pictures, and a lot of folks like to show off their mature males that are just these beautiful purples, violets. To date, I talked about my Zanestis species bright molted recently. It was a mature male, easily one of the top two most beautiful spiders I have ever seen in my life. And it might have just edged out the one that held that record for about 9 years, which was my Pamphlebedius species Duran male. God, that guy was beautiful. It was fuchsia, pinks, purple, just an amazing, it looked fake. And sadly, this was back when I had just started recording. I didn't have a ton of memory on my phone, so my early videos weren't recorded at very high resolution. I'm like, hey, we're just doing this. We're not doing this to be pretty. We're doing this to give people information. And my pictures weren't very good, so the only pictures I have in older ones, you can't see how much those colors pop. This was one of the most beautiful spiders I have ever seen in my life. So fortunately, though, I realized rather early on that, yes, the males are beautiful, but the females, although they may have some of those colors, so for example, my female Formictopus species Duran, right up to about the 6-inch mark, did have some purples and pink. She was gorgeous. Right up till when they hit around 5 inches, both of them picked up those colors. The female, though, as she continued to molt, lost some of those colors. So females will sport some of those purples and pinks and blues and whatnot early on, but they lose them as they grow and mature and pick up more earthy tones later on, like browns and blacks, which, again, gorgeous spiders, but they don't hold on to those colors. I've had so many people go, you should get a Pampho. Have you seen those purples on the males? Yes. On the females, not so much. And most people want females because they're going to be around for a while. Now, one thing that many species of Pamphos have that we're going to point out because people prefer this is a more velvety appearance. We have fuzzy spiders, and then we have the velvety ones, and they tend to be more velvety, like almost old world species where the hairs aren't all fuzzy and sticking out. They're slick back, shorter. They just have a very slick look to them. A lot of people prefer that. So again, when you're talking about the overall aesthetics of the spider, some folks prefer that velvety appearance. Now, let's move over to Formictopus. This is where I believe the knockout punch is, but people will disagree with me. Formictopus have a huge edge here as far as I'm concerned, because I remember seeing pictures of Formictopus Cancerides males, and then I remember seeing pictures of the females. The males were purple, gorgeous. The females turned, I think they're gorgeous, bronze. They can have a purplish tone to them overall, but most of them are in the bronze. Still beautiful spiders, but they don't keep the purple. And I remember thinking, oh, well, it's just like Pamphos. Then I got ones like Formictopus species South Hispaniola with the green. I got ones like Formictopus species Full Green. I got ones like Formictopus species Aratus with the gold. And everyone's favorite Formictopus species Dominican Violet. Guess what, guys? The females actually retain their beautiful colors. So while the people with the Pamphos, the females start to turn brown and black, which again, I love them. I don't want people thinking I'm pooping all over Pamphlebedius. I'm not. I adore both. But when you're talking about folks that are buying spiders for the unique colors, I still have Aratus has become one of my favorite all-time spiders. The gold is just brilliant. And these girls now are pushing, I think, 7 years old. My Dominican Violets, I had somebody come on, yeah, that's really nice, but what happens when they mature? These females are pushing 10 years old. They're mature, buddy. That's their colors. They still have the purple. Is it quite as bright as it was early on? Maybe not under regular light, but under when you get them under a decent light, it pops. So in my opinion, this is where Panthos kind of lose out a little bit because they're going to lose those colors. Only the males are going to have the colors. Granted, the males are stunning, but most of us want the females. You are going to have Formictopus females who have purples. They have greens. They have golds. They have bronzes. They have blues. Just, I think they run the gamut of having colors, and you're going to keep those colors for a long time. So when a Pampho, yep, you may have a 9-inch spider that has, you know, a wonderful brown chestnut pattern or dark black. Granted, black is really, really nice. Maybe with some red on the bum, which is beautiful. Granted, still a beautiful spider. You're going to have an 8-inch or 9-inch Formictopus that has green or purple or bronze or gold. So I have to give the edge here to Formictopus overall. Again, if people like the less fuzzy ones, this might be where they choose. I've had people say they don't like that most of the Formictopus tend to be the fuzzier ones. They have that fuzzier hair patterning where Panthos do, many of the Panthos have the velvety ones. However, I will say my Pamphibetus species Duran, very fuzzy spider. So it depends, but I'm going to give the edge in color patterning easily to Formictopus on this one. Now, next up, we have visibility. This one, I'm torn on this one. I almost want to make it a wash, but let me go through my personal experience with it and what I found by listening to what others have had to say and looking up stuff online. My Pamphibetus species are a mixed bag when it comes to being visible as adults. I'm talking about the adult ones. My Pamphibetus Arañapollito is always hiding. I catch her sometimes. She has a den. She hides in her den. I catch her sometimes out and about, but usually as soon as I jostle the cage, she disappears, which I have no problems with whatsoever. She's a beautiful spider, but she likes to hide. My Pamphibetus species Duran, same thing. That one has burrowed. She's in one of those sterilite containers. I want to get her in something bigger because I think she moved dirt around to the point where her burrow collapsed. She can't hide as well now, but for the longest time, she has burrowed from a little sling all the way right up through adulthood. Now, my Pamphibetus species Mascara, so far, she had a burrow. It has a sling, had a burrow, hoping it's a she. I don't know yet. Hasn't used it at all. Been right out in the open, even as a sling, which has been cool and refreshing because I love that little Christmas tree pattern. Oh, while we're talking about the Christmas tree pattern, back to color patterning. I didn't mention this in the other one, but the slings, the one thing I will say, the sling-wise, Formictopus, if you're doing the Dominican, the ones from the island of Hispaniola, they're blue, which is very pretty right off the bat. The Pampos have that Christmas tree patterning on their abdomens, which is also very pretty and striking. So sling-wise, they both have their own little things. You got blue, if you like blue, they have that little metallic blue appearance to it. The Pampos are also very cool. I love the Christmas tree patterning on the Pampos, so that's something I want to make sure I mention. I still give the edge to Formictopus, but I do think Pampho slings are gorgeous. So, all right, back to where we were. Visibility, I would say the Pamphibetus species, fairly visible overall, especially compared to other species. But when I go over to my Formictopus are some of the most visible spiders I keep. And I've told people this before, mine are like pet rocks. They sit right out in the open at all times. I have some in big acrylic cages. They're right out in the open at all times. They have burrows. I give them plenty of room to burrow. They don't burrow. I have ones that are in the sterilite containers where there's not enough room to burrow, but they do have a hide in there. They don't use them. I take them out when I feed them. They sit right out in the open. As I said earlier, I drop in their food, they eat, they sit right. They're always super, super visible. Every single one of them. As slings, I think both genera have slings that will do some burrowing. I think what you need to look at when you look at spiders is, as adults, what am I going to expect? Now, I'm sure some people will disagree. I'm sure folks out there have Pamphos and they're going to, I can already anticipate people are going to go, I've raised 3 Pamphos and they're all right out in the open. I just have to go by mine. Pamphos are also, if you look at the behavior, more skittish. And when I've looked at what other people have reported, if given some room to do some digging or given a burrow, a lot of them will bolt to their burrows. Even my Pamphibetus Antonus back in the day had a big cork bark half round in there that I kind of built some dirt around, and she used to bolt to that when she was, anytime I tried to open her enclosure. So she's much more visible now, but it's because I think her enclosure doesn't give her really, I don't think it's adequate to allow her to burrow. I have a funny feeling that when I put her into something that offers a little more depth, she might run and hide. So I'm going to give the slight edge, very, very slight edge, because I think both of them, I don't want people, and this is what I don't want. I don't want people who don't have any of these spiders yet, either Pamphos or Formictopus, to go, oh, Tom says Formictopus are going to be much more visible. I'll never see my Pamphos. No, I see my Pamphos all the time. This comes down to one sits right out in the open and is always visible, and one of them, if disturbed, may run and hide. If I go up there with my flashlight at night and shine it into the Araña Pollito's enclosure, she'll be sitting right up there on top. Every once in a while I come up, even during the day, she's sitting there right on top. It's just when you disturb her, she runs and hide. My Formictopus, they never use their burrows. They're like, here I am, I'm a Formictopus, I'm not going anywhere. So I give the slight edge, but anybody that's checking out these spiders, either of them, you can't lose with it. They're both going to be visible spiders. Now, our second to last topic, webbing. It's kind of a moot point. Neither of them web very much. I did have a Formictopus that suddenly went out. It was a Cancerides and webbed out the whole enclosure, which was kind of neat. I've never had one do that before, but they generally don't do a lot of webbing. They may, if they're using a burrow, they will web out a little bit in front of their burrow. That's how they put kind of their early detection system for prey, but the majority, neither of them do very much webbing at all. These are not, if you like webbing, neither Pamphobetus or Formictopus are spiders that you're going to want to check out because they're not heavy webbers. So that one is kind of a moot point. It's a wash. And finally, we have cost. Now, had I been doing this 10 years ago, the Formictopus would have won hands down with no issues. However, funny little thing happened over the last 10 years. People got really interested in Formictopus. And what happens when you're really interested in spiders? The supply, the demand goes up. There's not enough of the supply and the prices go through the roof. So back 10 years ago, easily Formictopus would have won because that's why I had so many of them. There were, we used to call them the poor man's Pampho. No joke. A lot of us that were in the hobby enjoying them would be like, yep, I picked up another poor man's Pampho, because that was always the one that people that didn't want to spend all the money on Pamphos would get as kind of their consolation prize, which is sad because I think they have a lot to offer too. However, nowadays, it's all over the place as far as costs. You can get some of the more readily available species for as little as $40 for a sling, and some of the more harder to get, more difficult to get species like the chicken spider, you can pay up to $300 for a sling. So $40 to $300 for Pamphos. My Mashallah, I think, was $45 to $55. I forgot to check before I did, but I think reasonable for a spider that's going to hit 4 inches in a year or so. Not a bad price at all. Now, for Formictopus, same general thing. You're talking $40 for some Cancerides. I've seen Aratus offered on sale for $45 or so. They can be rather inexpensive. Dominican violets can be anywhere from, I've seen them as cheap as $60 to up to $110. And then they recently came out with a bunch of new quote unquote species of Formictopus that started off around $250 for a sling. You can get them now for like $200. So $40 to $200. The other one's $40 to $300 with the chicken spider being the outlier. I think most of them are around the same price. So as far as costs, I can't really give either of them the edge anymore. There are cheaper ones, there are more expensive ones. They're all around the same price range. If you price shop, you can probably find them around similar prices. So we're going to call it a wash with price. It's not like it used to be. I think, again, if I had done this years ago, this would have been another check for Formictopus. It's not the same anymore. Formictopus is caught up. They're popular now, which is great. It was what I always wanted, except for the fact now I have to pay more for them, which is not fair. So thanks, guys. No, but seriously, I give this one a total wash. And then kind of a final comment on these, most in need of a revision. For a while, that would have been Pamphobetus. There were so many Pamphobetus species out there from different locales. It could have very easily have been some of the more common ones that had been on the market. But as time has gone by, we have the same issue with Formictopus now. People were loving Formictopus, and we just recently had like 4 or 5 new species come in within the last 2 years or so that, again, people were selling for like $250 for slings, which may just be different variants of Cancerides. So are they really worth that much? Probably not. I'm raising a couple of them. I know one of the ones I paid $250 for, I think, is a sling, or $200 for is a sling, essentially is looking like it's a Formictopus species South Hispaniola. It has the gold carapace, it has the green femurs, it has the reddish abdomen. It looks very familiar because I've raised up several of these before. So I just spent an exorbitant amount of money for something that I already own. So both of them are a disaster when it comes to the genus and being revised and looked at and by taxonomists. Both of them desperately need somebody to look at them and try to figure out what we have here. Because I got a funny feeling, although I may say I have 14 different Formictopus quote-unquote species in my collection, that if somebody were to examine them and study them, I'm guessing that number drops precipitously. So as far as most in need of revision, they both need a revision. So let's count them up. Let's see. We have sling size, growth rate goes to Pamphibidius, as does max size. So that's 3 wins for Pamphibidius. For Formictopus, we have temperament and hairs because there's no kicking. We have color patterning and visibility. The rest are either ties, so I have the edge going to Formictopus. So, yay, Formictopus is our win. No, I'm just kidding. I have this slight edge going to Formictopus on this one. But again, how much is that tainted by my own personal preference, by my own, what I've witnessed in my own collection? This, they are two, let's, my final word on this is you can't go wrong with either. They are two amazing genera of tarantulas. So if you're somebody out there that's listening to this, do not take away from this. Tom's Big Spider said Formictopus are better. I have to go there. Take out of this, Tom's Big Spider said in his fun little game to compare them, he has one edging the other one out slightly, but they're both amazing, and somebody else's opinion is totally going to disagree. Remember, what does the saying go? Opinions are like buttholes. And we'll leave it at that. So that's my opinion, but others may disagree. They are both amazing spiders. Both of them represent some of the true giants in our hobby. They are very hardy. They are easy to grow up. They start big as slings. They grow quickly. They put on great size. There's a lot of colors to love and patternings to love. Just awesome spiders. So do we really have a loser here? No, we have two winners. I do think in my heart of hearts that Formictopus with the appearance might edge some of them out, especially folks who want colorful spiders. The fact that you can have a giant colorful spider really is a huge edge. But I know I've spoken to many other folks that aren't into the colors and they like the sleek look of the Pamphilus. Can I argue with that? No, it comes down to personal opinion. So there you have it. We're going to get, I don't think, and I wanted, I'm going to be honest. Everybody knows how much I love Formictopus. What people don't know sometimes is how much I really do love Pamphos, and I want to get more Pamphos. I just love all the big, you know, tropical spiders. I assume people are going to see this and go, of course, Tom's going to have Formictopus win. I tried to honestly have Pamphos win, but I just, if I really answered these truthfully, this is exactly what I came up with. So this was as close as I come up to is impartial, because I really did take some things away from Formictopus after closer glance that I thought Formictopus might have won, but I have to really give it to Pamphos. Again, it's all for fun. So that will do it for this one. As always, you can find me on thomasbigspiders.com. You can find me on Thomas Big Spiders Podcast. You can find me on YouTube. I've been behind on the YouTube. I got to admit, I've been lacking the motivation to put up YouTube videos. I don't know. It usually happens this time of year. The nice thing is I went back through some of my older videos and realized it happens right after the Christmas break, usually is when I slow down a little bit and then I pick up steam as summer comes on. So I will be doing where you have to rehouse 2 of my Orphanacus philippinus. One of them's a young adult, one of the slings that I produce. Another one is one that I got as a freebie when I ordered from somebody. I can't remember who it was, but that one needs a rehousing. So we're going to do a double rehousing. I love showing them off. I love the Ophilopinus, so that'll be a fun one. Hopefully Billy and I are going to record that later on today, and that will probably go up Friday if we get it done. As for that, may do a feeding video. I've got feeders coming in on Monday. I haven't done a feeding video in a little while, and honestly, they're just fun, and I want to talk a bit about, I think what I may do is do a feeding video, but this one talk a bit about like what we talked about in another podcast, not overfeeding them. What do we look for when we're feeding our spiders? Is this one too big? Should we drop crickets in for this one? We'll see how that one goes. That will do it for this one, guys. Please let me know what your take is on, what is your favorite, Pampho or Formictopus? I don't care either way. They're both amazing spiders. I would never argue. Somebody comes on and goes, I disagree with you. I think Pamphibidius. I'm totally okay with that, but I'd love to hear what your preference are. Which ones are you collecting? Which ones do you have the most of? Which ones do you think are the prettiest? Which ones do you think are the fastest growing? Just chime in with your Pampho and Formic stuff. Guys, I'll do it for this one. As always, stay safe. We'll catch you all next time.